Contra Mortem. The epigraph is from Lao Tzu. 30 spokes unite in one nave, and because of the part where nothing is, we have the use of a wheel. The being. Wherever shadow falls, wherever the drowning of darkness in great light takes waking under, and still awake, and still all discerning, reaching as if to enter in any soever passages or subsurfaces, burning like a dry film upon the inner attaining of earth, of leaf, of water, of stone, of blood. There, murmuring in the din of a talon-taken grievance, there in a flood seething or in the rattle of dry snow seas, there trembling for the mood of hysterical winds, deceitful thistles, meteors blooming, there in the huge fire that rusts everything away, the opening middle where the world falls in forever, there, there, the woman. Among birches, moving in their white half-nakedness, she dances, and the veils of her being obscure her or half-obscure her, for they are her dress or her undress. While nearer or farther she dances, moving effortless and self-absorbed, like the birches, with their sense of naturalness. And when she appears naked at last, having cast to the breeze her semblances as in her dreams, the birches step intricately before her, or drench her in cooling shadows, all the riches of this presence flowing upon her and through her, making her an object in the true world, unknowable, her dance the dance of things without past or future, given and perfect and beyond and inconsolable. The child. Otherwise considered, being is a force more or less well directed. Cometh the child, exploded, running 9 ways at once, an egg dropped, a cup spilled, a universe erupting, hell on wheels. Whence, backward rocking, he incautiously squints in the village square of the square village to the spire, up, up, and up, verge upon verge, higher and higher, till he sits in his damp breeches, plop, extended, a being from his ass to his 3 wits, real to ideal, and then gets up, weeping his laughter, dancing his stumble, worlding every unworld, eating names in his soup, lowest of low, quickest unlife, the immense lordling. The trees. Birches, 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 true and white, demure of habit and standing on ceremony, bending there, left or right, a grove, a classical harmony, and yet some secret moves among them. Light quivers. Is it the aspens twinkling? The night comes up, raining a dark breeze, ruffling the spirit, and the near trees quicken, sparkle, vanish to the forest, among dogwood and elm, spruce and balsam, viburnum and sweet locust, beech, rock maple, tamarack, alder, a congress, a quiet congress, for not one leaf intrudes predominantly. Yet this repose, this calm, this being fills the night of the living wood. The brook. A threefold obstacle. The center rock, so enormous only a glacial hand could lift it or settle it in this bed. The hemlock, fallen long since and drifted into the wide right cleft between rock and bank, stripped by the current, denuded of limbs and bark, and yet still green, emerald green with moss, and its great crest new grown among cardinal flowers. Then in the narrower channel on the left, an iron pot, out at the bottom, and at last forever full. The stone, the flower, the artifact, to mark the brookfall, singing flutes in the trees, music never faltering, always exact, rising, falling, in the remote black seas. The mountain fastness. Beyond and farther, and yet from every vantage, rising eternally near, crag above crag, this is the upthrust. A tossed village lies like a trampled flag at its feet. And up there, look, the ridge sloughs off the stunted firs like the very selvage of earth itself, raveled and frayed where the ground peels back. Call it the void pulled inside out, or the universal grain in a mindless exultation sprung from the nut grain. Its climbers learn footholds too far apart, and their own impatience, and death in the dark drops. Call it a comprising, call it the center and edge of every relation, the journeyer's pivot and the journeyer's horizon. The village. Twilight dribbles down the mountain. There below, in slowly gathering shadow, the lights come on, lighted windows, vague and yellow and very old. The town is flecked with light except in the deep hollow where the graves sink down. Hallowed, white, and narrow, the steeple rises under a copper fish swimming in final rose light. The Dutch elm beetle carries his little burden from tree to tree. Somewhere a dog barks petulantly across a steel guitar. Ah, it is all extraordinarily nostalgic, as people find who come from the city to fret beneath the police magistrate's famous hat rack that was the last caribou and now is a pity. The fall. Still, after the clapper cracked the bell, after the suffocating complicity of the riot, summer's strangling, tangling toil, still there came quiet, the colors of mediation in the fall, twilight and robins chirping, still and all. Potatoes and butternuts laid by, the old bees dreaming how to die in a drunken reverie by the dripping press, and asters and goldenrod murmuring dark lights through the sleepiness of completed things. After the blade had driven through the eye and spilled the gold, something was won, some recompense was had in the histories of anguish quietly told. The Great Death. Oh, if a thousand old folk looked askance when a puff of cyanide, like a colorless wind, seized their gentle world, so and so, who else observed it? Yet behind the customary daylight, the small dance of twinkling leaves had darkened, and the scenes that were revisited and tales retold were not the same. Strangely, the world looked empty and strangely distant, as if the stones themselves had grown absent-minded and had forfeited their presence. Yet the suns rose, the moons set, and people were open-handed or close-fisted as before. The children went back to school, where a few of them comprehended that what was called their questing was their lack. The little death. Falling, plummeting, unexpectedly, sickeningly, through the region of gray cloud inhabited by floating objects, such as an eye that grows on a stem, a bed hopping like a rabbit, a glass finger, a tray of rings and minnows, an artificial boy, a pistol, descending through this in rolling, qualming swoops, helpless, filled with nausea, until far, far down, far in a distant night, the clouds open on a dark pool and then a reflected star. With a desolate cry, falling, falling, falling into the star, the candle flame, the spark, and through and out in the no place where all the nothings never are. The coming of snow. Along the denuded aisles a shadow walks, casting no body, bending no branch, nor cracking one dry twig. It sighs and talks, or maybe only the bracken is mumbling in the wind. Nothing or no one takes the time to care. The snow comes, a few flakes unobserved, then thicker, softening the raw air almost as in the spring, apple petals falling diffuse the sun, but cold and with a tang of reality. And though at first they seem to run him through and vanish on his tongue, slowly he takes an outline and footprints show the passage he has truly made among the rubble graces brightening in the snow. The moon. Reflected light, reflected again on snow, but beauty is lonely, lonely. The snow surface is hard, gleaming, vitrescent, blue, without crest or crevice, extending beyond anywhere, for long ago the horizon crumbled in an indeterminate glow, and the night has stillness. Light that is fragile, paleolithic, white, from this fossil shell embedded in a sky of shale, conveys a snow-gleaming track for the solitary, on and on, a trial of his soul desperation, climbing the world of pure beauty. Remote and high, a real light glimmers, an upland farmstead shining, or only a star in the unhorizoned sky. The book. Pure beauty is pure being, and pure being is freedom in its most desperate purity. Winter was taintless, Pythagorean, and meaningless. Then why was freedom in its purity so unfreeing? Why was the world and its lovely snow a thing so merely coercive, like a page, white and unrealized? Why must rage and responsibility choose the which and when and where for each impress of something particular, some character? The pen wrote freedom's elegy, nothing less than ultimate aggrievement for the cost of mind's disablement in loneliness, and for the natural things so wrongly lost. The thaw, rigidity, non-life, the meaning neither of life nor of unlife, neither a presence nor an absence, but the snow world, the compacted snow and ice so powerful that the granite formed in the nuclear sun clicks like the dice in a crapshooter's hand and shatters. A white incumbency, white being the color of hardness, as in the unusual power of iridium. A lithic ideal gripping the forest in petrifaction, bringing the encompassing, the silence, the sidereal frost, not just an anti-sound, but a singing of nothing, a reciting of never to be born, until, whether near or remote, auspicious or menacing, the water, by drop, by drop, by drop, begins to fall. The stone. Difficult to think of a stone's gratitude. Difficult, for that matter, to think of stone, essences so various. The white shade cast by the winter moon withdraws into covert places, and the multiflood of earthlight, often darkly or in tones subdued by interspersion, slowly drenches the forest, the brook, the stone. Birches step forward, and the stone rises like an earth spirit, snow dripping from its flanks, burnished and new, but scarcely changed, a merit of the abiding between the banks, marking the upstream from down. Its warmth is taken from another source, yet such warmth taking links the primal act with this. So the woods waken. The water. The brook had been frozen almost everywhere. Mounds of snow had covered the ice, serene and cool as corpse flesh, while quiet small sounds came from the holes where the skein of black water continued winding. But now only the scraps and tatters of the snow are left on the banks, and the water seems purged of darkness, brighter than its winding imminence. In the shallows, where pebbles excite the current, the brook is shaken like the quivering light and shadow of aspen leaves, or like the cadence of hundreds of migrant wings, flashing in sunlight against the flow forever, far from their nests, and singing, singing so pleasantly in their flight. The leaves. If the sky were green instead of blue, its green would be the aspen leaves, which have the same inlighted sweet intensity of tone and are the first to come in spring, close followed by hickory, ash, hawthorn, and the rest, with butternut last. Each has its own conception of green, some yellow, some blue, some, like the rock maple, reddish, nor is any leaf precisely like any other. Their tide assaults the mountain by way of the gradual foothills. Greening breakers lunge and snap at the heights, counting the evenings forest by forest, until the waves splash on the far high summit, announcing the actual world in the heyday of the leaves. The Primavera. Through the forest, across the fair hills, away to Campagnas glistening, to deltas sparkling in the suns of finer canticles, to the Bois, to the Luckenwalde, to Arden, to the name of every wood sung in a heart cry, see the dog run. Light as a wish, free as a thought, he runs with his nose to the ground, raising his bell voice, gone and returned on his keen inquisitive course as swift as an echo. And the prints of his paws are flowers, and the shaking of his coat is the soft rain, and the glow of his eyes is the making of nests. His terror is the scourging of somnolence, for he is the dog of spring, and in his going and his returning lie the powers of extension and concretion that make and remake all being. The woman's genitals. Oh, this world, and oh, this dear world body, see how it has become. How it has flowered, and how it has put on gaudy appearances. How it is a plum in its ripening, a rose in its reddening, a berry in its glistening, a finch in its throbbing, a cowrie in its extraordinary elusiveness, a night of midsummer in its fragrance, a tide in its deep surging, and a dark woodland spring in its concealing sources. See how it is velvety, how its innerness clings and presses, how nearly it repulses, how it then takes and cherishes, how it is austere, how it is free, how it reviles abuses, and how it is here, and how it was always here. The sun. Such a reasonable, irrational fellow, good-humored and reliable too, since the occasional scorching is someone else's fault. No wonder the ancients frankly adored him. And if their solemnity seems now simple-minded, nevertheless, he is highly esteemed and honored more than sometimes appears. A landlord who never asks for the rent is hardly to be despised. And what does he care for but to be good company with everything and to promote the common welfare by maintaining the regularity of public occasions? Unhappily, although he desires nothing but calm and abhors the solitary, he dwells alone, burning with a million fires. The child's being, extended and always uncentered, which is why it scares everyone but him. When an insistent finger stabs him with a U, he only stares uncomprehendingly, a stranger to the pronominal itch, and then, pointing anywhere, to the tree, the cloud, the flower, distant or near, expostulates in manic delight, me, 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 a spendthrift spate of consciousness. And thus the child puts on his being as the dark world in its necessity puts on the dawn, by turning toward it. The child, trembling in half-light, giving himself away, becomes sun's favor, the choice of what is not willed, a being free-born and intricate, like the day. The being as memory. A carpet raveling on the loom, a girl with a widow's peak and misty legs, a moon like a fisheye rising from a pool, a black long winging loon bursting a fire in the sunset, a torn sail groveling in a wave, a whisper in a stairwell, a helmet upturned in the black rain and later a star reflected, a coin glimmering on sea stones, a sound of motors and machine guns in the dawn, a kiss and candle flame, a sonata for clarinet, a bone cracking, a woman wearing a blue veil, and in Kashan, in a room where the little dark-eyed weaving girls lay down and died, a carpet raveling on a loom. The being as moment. Between a sea and a sea where the combers meet in the cancellations of their endless breaking. Between a dream and a dream where the night arrests in eternal waking. Between two notes of a Thracian song where the flute stops and an infinite silence opens. What is it? Where is it? What and where, O sea and dream and song? Will the blurred images surging ever fill the abyss toward which they flow? Sighing in the long, languid tango of their kiss, will the lovers on that continually dying wave of sensation ever really know what they know, their drift and their expiring between a sea and a sea in the faint star glow? The being as prevision. The mind's eye is flitting like a moth among summer furs, the pale white slow fast moth that threads the burning pillars of the hidden sun and fares tricklingly over the ferny fire splashes of the forest bed among whorls of misty gold rising in aureoles under the branches. There the veeries whistle the variations of a curious doubling echoing note, and the oven birds shriek surprising hallelujahs in unseen transepts. There the filigree ferns, the moccasin flowers, the great trees, and the pale white moth are a lucency in the semi-dusk of causeless light, until through a gap the source burns, burns for a dazzling instant, and then turns blank. The ecstasy. Dawn will be the time, and the forest will be the place, the brook, the stone, in their arrest and flowing, turning perpetually in the kind of grace that is simply a kind of knowing intensified around this present. The woman's face, half smiling against the stone, will seal the force of the lordly surging flooding sun entering with her husbandman, entering, surging, flooding, and yet not seen and never to be told. The brook, its music almost lost or too serene for her to hear, will in its small crook fold her on the stone, her strange half smile, as if the earth had found its generic look, will stay upon the stone a long, long while. The summer. Cicadas blur the ear as the blue heat haze blurs the eye. Fulfillment is a word known to be lucky, and hence not nice, or perhaps a shade absurd. Wise folk avoid it, though they may speak of days of changing tension. Softly the hay fields rise in the seed time's changing browns and rusts to the green mountain where the farthest crests blur in purple boundaries like the child's outreaching perceptions and fall back in media gloria like the folds of the woman's experience. The red wings, the meadowlarks, the tree swallows zoom in the warmth, small and sudden pleasant interconnections uniting all this knowledge with the earth. The nothing, one and two. Look in the flower, deep in the tulip cup, where the redness sinks in a still whirl of black. look in the stone, look in the drop of water, or look back or forward to the moon or the sun, or look up to the wells of the sky, look down the hot strip of the highway straightening forever, or in the glass gone blank and silver of the cars plunging past. Look in the socket of the candlestick, or in that of the shot glass. Look in the empty gauntlet, or look in the clamshell, or in the straw hat of the president. Look well in the book whose perfect lines string out so black and flat. Look at the cigarette smoke rising, look, look, where the child's eyes glaze with memory, where the man's glaze with foreknowledge, and how they darken and alter to vacancy, as when the shifting breeze ramps like a closing shutter on the deep-lighted bay. Look in the woman's eyes bravely at her moment of rapture when the skies loom between her lashes, or look there in the mirror at those eyes, bend closer and closer still. Look in the black pupils where other eyes appear, and in them others, infinitely, infinitely, pools of incomprehension. Look, the fear is nothing. Look, the courage nothing. The song has no consequence. Look, look, it is here. Nothing, 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 nothing. The Wheel of Being, 1 and 2. Changing figures. The Dionysian child, the woman in her assurances, the old town in its hallucinations spilled like dominoes, the mountain and the void, the moon and the sun whirled from mist-hidden veil to veil, and the day coiled in the forest. A word is like an ant dragging a dead spider, the meant and the unmeant. So upon ragged, changing seas, the poem, which is a ship, buoyed by its hollowness on the abstruse coordinates of meaning, carries the loop of its horizon forever with it. Scan this circle vanishing across the deep. It is contrived. It is actual. It is a man. Such figures, if they succeed, are beautiful, because for a moment we brighten in a blaze of rhymes, and yet they always fail and must fail and give way to other poems in the endless approximations of what we feel. Hopeless, it is hopeless. Only the wheel endures. It spins and spins, winding the was, the is, the will be out of nothing, and thus we are. Thus on the wheel we touch, each to each, a part of the great determining reality. How much we give to one another. Perhaps our art succeeds after all, our small song done in the faith of lovers who endlessly change heart for heart as the gift of being. Come, let us sing against death.